Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Hi, everyone. This is the Rose Colombo, right here for you every Wednesday.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. Listen up, because today we're going to be talking to a very special guest in the world of authors and books and experts. And today we have a wonderful author. Her name is Virginia Dale, and she wrote the book Rich White Americans, and it begins back in the 1960s. Virginia Dale has had two other books published, Never Marry in Morocco, The Bushy Daughters Go to War, and Find Rummy. And she's also had 5-star reviews, including the Santa Barbara Independent. She lived abroad for 7 years in Madrid, Spain, and Rabat, Morocco, where she became well acquainted with the Spanish, French, and Moroccan cultures. She currently resides in Santa Barbara, California. And we're going to explore her book. She's going to share her book with us, Rich White Americans, hot off the press. And it's part thriller, part action adventure. The story is from the standpoint of a young woman who foils rape. It's 1963, and Annie spends a summer in her parents' new home in Swank, Montecito, while waiting to finish her senior year at UC Berkeley. And as you know, in the 1960s, UC Berkeley was in the news quite a bit. So this is going to be very intriguing and interesting. So don't touch that dial. We will be back in just a moment.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure, be sure to bring your appetite.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live. I'm always happy to have you listen in to our experts and our authors and on a myriad of topics, from love to romance to fiction to truth to politics. And you name it, we have it. Most shows are archived, but so all you have to do is Google back in. If you miss a show and you have a special topic and an expert that you'd like to listen to, at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can also read my blogs at roseforjustice.com. And as I stated earlier, we're here today with Virginia Dale. She is the author of Rich White Americans, and it starts back with the time frame of 1963. So let's get started and let's say hello to our wonderful guest and author, Virginia Dale. Welcome, Virginia. We're happy to have you on Columbo Chronicles Live.
Oh, thank you so much, Rose. I hope I can be wonderful.
I'm sure you will be, and I'm sure you are. And it's the holiday season. Everybody's wonderful now. So,
yes,
Virginia.
I love the decorations.
Oh, me too. It makes me happy. So,
yes.
Virginia, you were growing up in the 1960s, and you ended up over at Berkeley, which was in the news consistently during the 60s. And so what inspired you to write a book and entitle it Rich White Americans?
What inspired me really was I was at the Santa Barbara Writers Conference, and there was an agent there, a well-known agent, Paul Fedorko, who read the first five pages. He was critiquing, I thought he was going to critique my style, but he read the first five pages, and they were quite sensational. It was about how I had arrived at my parents' new home in Montecito, and a good friend of mine from who had gone to Berkeley was introducing me to friends, and I ended up going to a party, and after the party, yes, I did have a few drinks and all of the above. After the party, the young man who escorted me didn't escort me straight home. So I was in I had to sort of find my way home after he had other ideas in mind of, he didn't want to take me home, actually. He hauled me out of the car, threw me over his shoulder like a sack of potatoes. Yes, a screaming and shouting sack of potatoes, and tossed me on a bed, at which point I became very, I fought like a demon, and I managed to foil something that could have been perhaps very damaging. It would have been very damaging, but I wasn't afraid. I was, I just fought. That's all I could do. I fought, and then I used my wits, and I talked him out of the situation, telling him I was going to cooperate, but of course I ran like the fleetest of deer out of that house, never to return, and I escaped, and went next door and met some other nice young men from Harvard. These were all very extremely wealthy people, and they were rich, they were white, they were American, and so somehow I decided to call the book that. And during the summer, I actually ended up dating one of the young men. Well, Innie did. I have called the heroine, the protagonist, Innie, as you hear every man. Well, I'm thinking this of her as any woman. So I called her Innie, but I didn't spell A-N-Y. I spelled I-N-N-Y. Because any woman can find herself in this situation, and so many have, and they don't know how to talk about it. It's difficult to talk about. So since sexism and racism and all of this stuff is, you know, always boiling around these terrible topics, I think we need to address them. And
I think back in 1963, it was even, you know, people didn't talk about it, period. I mean, you might confide in a best friend, but that was about it. I don't think most girls probably told their parents. Did you tell your parents about the incident?
Well, these young men who opened the door and let me in and took me home told me I should tell my parents, who were very, very, goodness, they were very shy people, prudish. is the word. So I told them, but they never talked to me about it. The mother gave Innie a pill to take, which turned out to be a Valium. And so she slept the night through and woke up feeling quite well, actually. But the mother was afraid of such subjects. So she didn't broach the subject ever with her daughter. And the daughter, Innie, simply took it in stride, and she wrote a letter to a good friend explaining what had happened and that she had escaped. She was very proud. She felt triumphant for having gotten away from that fellow because he was quite a bit larger than she was.
Well, yeah, I mentioned that. Did you ever tell your parents? Because I don't think most girls tell their parents, especially back in the 60s. And so these were all wealthy young people in Montecito, Santa Barbara area, and a lot of young people in college at that time were probably from wealthy families as well. So did Innie find it difficult to mix in, or did she come from a wealthy family, or did she just kind of blend in with all of the wealthy people?
The young man who drove her home that night appeared at her door the next day and invited her to nice restaurants and parties, and she did live in Montecito. They said, oh, is she all right? Because they were not just wealthy, they were heirs to gigantic fortunes, the Pullman fortune. That's changed. All these names have changed, of course. And the friend from Berkeley who introduced her to them, his father owned, or father and mother, I would assume, owned all the lemon orchards in Ojai and had several homes, magnificent homes. So it was a kind of wealth that even surprised Innie, although she had met, she had encountered wealth at Berkeley, but not this immense, immeasurable wealth. However, she discovered that wealth comes with a price tag, especially the children of extremely wealthy parents often are a bit, they have to live up to a certain reputation. They've had extremely successful, financially successful parents, but also Innie encountered divorce. Many of these parents had been divorced multiple times, and that was new back in the 60s. Divorce was not, something that, 50% of the people today have a second marriage. That was not so back then. You held on to your marriage, and usually often for the children, and sometimes you just, were very happily married. So she discovered people who were often confused, and they had a big onus that they had to achieve, but they didn't know exactly what, and many of them drank to excess, which she found out at the parties. And she herself could drink, but she was not someone who habitually, got up in the morning and drank. And they were alcoholics. And to her, the biggest surprise was that they shoplifted.
Oh.
Which, to this day, I and Innie have never, ever understood quite why people who could buy, the Taj Mahal practically would take little things from stores and even from her friends. She knew that there was something wrong. And so these were wealthy people, but they had problems. Money doesn't solve all your problems at all. It may be the beginning of your problems, because people will actually, you know, they will try to extort your money. All kinds of things happen. You know, money is the root of all evil. That's in the Bible.
Well, money can also help protect the wealthy people from, you know, newspapers about their children, or, you know, keeping everything suppressed too. And the thing is
is true.
Yes. And Innie said that she was very close to her grandmother, loved her grandmother very much, and didn't so much get along with her mother. And do you think that played into any of the reason why she wanted to be so independent?
Yeah, she grew up in her grandmother's home. She was born in World War II, and her father was an Annapolis graduate fighting in the Pacific. So she got to know her. She had two mothers, essentially, both the grandmother and the mother, and that was a confusing situation. So the grandmother was much more ready to mother this young woman, this baby, than the actual mother, who was a bit, she was not quite ready for a child. So Innie identified with her grandmother, and the mother must have resented that, perhaps. At any rate, the mother was very straight and narrow. She just wanted Innie to get married, you know, learn to play a good hand of bridge, have two children, and do what she did. Whereas the grandmother was a free spirit. She was a lark. She played the piano. She sang. She sang in public. She was a character. And any child is going to love a grandmother like that, of course.
Yes.
So there was tension in the family about who actually was, I don't know, not who was the real mother, but where Innie's affections lay. And the mother resented that, apparently, and took it out on Innie. Whereas the grandmother was, the maternal grandmother was back in Florida, you know, with she'd broken her leg when a car had backed into her. She had physical problems, but she was the old-fashioned kind of grandmother who never complained, everything for the children. So there is tension between the mother and Innie throughout the novel, which is resolved in the end, because Innie meets and falls in love and gets engaged to Berkeley's first black English professor, whose name I've changed, Albert Curtis, in the book. And he says, "You must forgive your mother." And so she thinks about it. She's a bit surprised. And in the end, yes, it's a book about forgiveness, but it's also a book about enjoying life. And if there are obstacles that come along, if some young man gets very drunk and decides to, you know, throw you on a bed caveman style and try to take advantage of you, well, you fight. You fight. Mm-hmm. You do your best. And I know not all women are able to fight such a creature off, but Innie was. And she always fought for her own rights and for those of her friends, because many of her friends, not many, but some of them had, one of them was in an abusive relationship. The one who lived across the hall from her at Berkeley in their studio apartments. And so she was trying to help this friend, but not quite understanding why she stayed in an abusive relationship.
Right.
Because any would not have. But women do that who don't have the confidence to leave. So there's, oh my gosh. So there's battered women, there's racism because Albert is black. Innie's mother finds out she's with a black man, and she wants to get rid of him at all costs. even if it means, you know, killing him. And she refuses to believe he's a professor. So there's a whole...
well, that's
a whole,
quite a combination because the fact is that back in the 1960s and 70s, there was still a lot, and even the 80s, was a lot of prejudice going on. And so that's intriguing in the book about this at the time in the 1960s that a white girl would fall in love with a black professor and not have people, especially her parents, concerned about that situation back then. I like that part because it's true.
Yes. Well, they're very worried about what the neighbors will say. That sort of thing was prevalent in those days. They wanted to, you know, they wanted to impress people. The father was having a rough go of it. He was an engineer, but he wasn't really able to hold down jobs, and he had to support his wife, who had had a very wealthy father, and so there was a huge burden on the father as well, who doesn't say much, but a lot of the plot really turns around him, and he's one of the, the kindest people in the book. He and the grandmother are very, very kind. And well, Innie herself is always there to help whoever, any underdog. She's just, she's any woman. She wants to help. And I think both men and women always want to help someone who is in trouble. Some more than others. Innie seemed to gravitate in that direction. So a lot of the stories spun around that. Plus, just enjoying life because Albert, the professor that she who was living in that small apartment complex, that she and her friend, who was being abused by the boyfriend, were living in. He had such a joie de vivre. Here he was, one of the only black people at the University of California, you know, and he was a first. In those days, being a first was very important, the first black English professor in my own life. Sophia Curtis was a good friend of mine, and her father was the first black engineer to graduate from Berkeley. And she, so I knew a lot of these people who were breaking ground for others to follow. But mm-hmm. Albert did it with joy, with humor, making fun of racism, making fun of racist ads, you know, Jergens will make your hands softer, whiter. Oh, he thought that was hysterically funny. And he would make fun of it in front of people. He would put on lavender wigs to make fun of this skin color, hair color nonsense. And in other words, Albert just, I don't know, you give him lemons and he would make champagne. he was beloved at Berkeley.
Yeah, and the father, he was in the military. And so do you think that affected her strong will? Where do you think she got her strong will to be independent and do her own thing?
Well, the independence may have come from the grandmother, because the grandmother was, the grandfather was off doing his own thing. He was what was called president of the post office in Washington, D.C., they said, back there in those days. And she was often on her own. So I think her strong spirit came from the grandmother, but also the mother had a very strong spirit in a different way, but she brooked no quarter. You know, if you opposed her in any way, she would let you know who was boss. She was mm-hmm. an extremely strong woman. But often not in the most fortuitous way. It didn't always, she was not really helping the cause. She didn't know that. She was just, you know, trying to be a rich white American. She was trying to impress the neighbors. And she was a little annoyed. She was more, well, she was worried about her husband not, you know, advancing fast enough and that sort of thing. It's an old story.
Right. And so, well, because there was so much prejudice and there were so many laws, there were still laws in place too. And so.
Miscegenation.
Yeah. And so, what about the fact that, you know, she had this friend who was in this situation, as you said. There was no place for them to go at the time, was there, where today they have all these different
shelters.
Right.
They had no such thing there that I had ever heard of. We didn't even talk about battered women back then. We had heard of women being beaten, but I had never met, you know, a woman who had, or a mother who was having any problems with her husband of that sort. But Sally, who lived next door, in the apartment next door, was with a very abusive man, a bit older than she was, quite a bit older, perhaps, well, in those days, seven or eight years, and we were just 21. And so in those days, you just ditched the guy. And so Annie would say, ditch him, Sally. And Sally said, I can't. No, I'm not pretty. I'm not this. I flunked out of Berkeley. She chose to feel sorry for herself rather than to fight and to, you know, get out on her own and find a job, anything other than allow this man to continue to terrify her. But so Annie was trying to help her, but she didn't really know how. And in the end, it was Albert, who was black from Harlem. He knew people down at the Bosun's Locker, it was called. There was a wonderful bar run by black people in Berkeley on Shattuck Avenue that everyone loved and went to because they'd always throw a party when we came, and they even threw a birthday party that's not in the book for one of my friends, a fun birthday party. And they actually had a couple of women in the back who were helping women in need. So Albert finally sent Sally over there, and Sally began to come out of her shell of self-pity, anyway, and began to discover that, yes, she could do things. So there is a happy ending for almost everyone, I think.
Oh, good. So the book is really empowering, and it's enlightening because
yes,
it can take anybody who wasn't living in the 60s or wasn't aware of what was happening in the 60s. So it helps people understand the situations. And I like that because, as you said, there weren't any shelters back then for women, and people didn't talk about abuse. And the women who were abused probably just stayed silent because it was an embarrassment, as you said, to neighbors and society to have your family name tarnished. And so,
then, of course,
the prejudice that went on with marrying a black professor at that time. So that entails a lot of issues that were happening during that period of time that many people will enjoy reading about and remembering how we were then and how we got to where we are today. And young people will enjoy reading how it was back then. And your book is a page turner, and people don't want to put it down. They want to keep reading it. Oh, yes. And so do you have any plans on it becoming a movie? It would be like a great Hallmark Lifetime movie, I think. What do you think?
Well, it's still in its incipiency. It's just come out. I mean, I would love it to be made into a film. I didn't mention this, but I did make a movie about 10 years ago. I produced a very small movie. But anyways, I would love to. This would cost much more money than that tiny little movie I made. You know, and I do write screenplays. So I'm working on another novel called The Coal Miner's Christ, a very different novel about coal miners and their problems. But I would love to turn this into a screenplay, and I've got to start working on it and shop it around Hollywood, as they say.
Yes, it always boils down to money, too.
The money is all, it has to be bankable. I have written other screenplays. I pitched them in Hollywood, and I wrote one called Sushi and Bagels with the protagonist was a Japanese woman. And they said, name one bankable Japanese star. And I went, don't you just find them? I had no idea. I was so naive. So, you know, you do have to have, I mean, Hollywood is a business. You have to realize
right.
that. And they love to art and to do a completely artistic film, but they know they may lose their shirts on it. So Hollywood makes choices. Anyway, during the novel, I was simply trying to make Paul Fedorko happy and to recount what happened in my senior year, which turned out to be, and plus add a little, I mean, I made it, turned it into fiction. I wanted to make it interesting, but I had so much to work with. I mean, Albert Johnson, the first black English professor at Berkeley, and Albert, the way he used humor and charm and banter to make light of racism, the way he dealt with racism in such a positive way. It's, you know, and he always dressed in Brooks Brothers clothes. He was always dressed fit to kill, but ready for a party too. he was the joie de vivre. He loved life. And the message is, yes, you're going to be dealt a few lemons in life. Everyone is. And it's the way you work with these lemons and overcome them. They're obstacles, but you're going to overcome them either through humor or cunning or simply by running as fast as you can. You will overcome them and you will be proud of yourself. You will be stronger and more confident. And each time, each obstacle that you overcome will make you a better person. So this is about enjoying life. Damn the torpedoes, full steam ahead. Was it Admiral Jones, someone who said that? You just going forward, living life to the hilt, knowing, and you know that you're going to succeed because you have overcome so many obstacles. This is just another obstacle.
Right, and obstacles make people stronger. They build character.
Excuse me?
Oh, I said
obstacles
make people stronger and help build character.
Absolutely. You know, without obstacles, we would life would be a bit dull, actually. The obstacles
yeah.
are what make us interesting and even life interesting. I mean, here Innie was, she was almost raped, yes, but she not only fought the guy off, but she talked him out of it by agreeing to do it with him. And when he had to, you know, unbuckle something, she ran. So she used her wits and her feet out of it.
I like that.
So you use everything possible, you know, everything at your command to get out of whatever situation you're in. And certainly rape is an extreme situation, and people may be inebriated. They may not be themselves. And also forgive your rapist. She was never really mad at him. Well, she forgot about it. She was going forward. Here was the fellow who helped rescue her, so to speak, open the door at the next house, taking her to parties for the rest of the summer, and being very gentlemanly. So,
well, I like that because when you forgive, you can move on and you can move forward and enjoy your life. If you don't forgive, then you're stuck, right? She would have been stuck.
I understand women being traumatized and whatnot, and it was somewhat traumatic, but at the same time, don't let it hang you up. It's already been bad enough. Okay, let's go forward. Let's get our degree at Berkeley. Let's marry the first black professor at Berkeley. Let's live our life to the hilt. The professor, by the way, who got her to help him write a screenplay for Alexa Roma, who, of course, is Sophia Loren, who enabled her, who saw her intellect, whereas the other boys were saying, oh, are you writing a dusting article for Good Housekeeping? They made fun of her writing. Here was a man who honored her intellect, encouraged it. This is the kind of man you want in your life, and you don't care if he's black, pink, purple, or magenta. These are the kind of friends you want, friends who enable you, who respect you, and who respect you for your wit, your intelligence, and your courage. And they themselves will have those characteristics. Those are the kind of people to hang out with, and they don't smoke dope. Oh, pardon me.
Dope.
Actually, there was no dope at Berkeley at that time.
I said dope.
We had never heard of marijuana. It didn't exist until the Vietnamese War.
Right, and that's really interesting because, people think, that the young people today think, everybody knows about drugs, but back then people did not know about the drugs situation that was coming to America, and now it's here.
We were completely unprepared. I graduated. I remember in my senior year, someone came in with some marijuana to a younger man and said, "Ginny, let's go tripping. Look, you just smoke this and you trip." And I said, "Really? That's okay. I don't want to go on a trip." I just said no. No is a really important word in your language. Yes is a very important word also. But make your decisions wisely. I let him take his own trip. So, you can just say you don't have to follow the crowd. I know it's difficult for people to say no sometimes, especially young people.
Young people.
Which is why they need to overcome the obstacles and develop confidence. But the young people I meet today, and I do rent rooms occasionally to them, they're quite charming. There are no drugs ever. Mm-hmm. I've never seen drugs in my household. They want to get a very good degree. And most of them have a lot of confidence. I don't know.
I think we see too
much.
To
me, the secret is, it's education.
Yeah, I think we see too much of the young people who are not behaving properly on social media and TV and the news, but we don't see enough of the young people that are actually striving to make themselves and the world a better place. And there's plenty of them out there in America and around the world, too. But
it's
especially
such a shame,
in America.
But they don't sell newspapers. It's the murder stories and the horrible stories that unfortunately sell newspapers, make the news. And, I really turn off the news now when I another shooting, six
it.
More dead people. I'm like, I can't take it. I mean, I'm saturated.
No,
this
because
is not...
more people die from medical incompetence or mistake in a hospital than they
and
do
car
from
accidents.
These
bad
guns,
driving.
So it's it's no use listening to the news because they're just going to going to put you into a negative frame of mind. And I think it's good to stay positive, and for young people to stay positive, that the world is not doom and gloom. It's a beautiful place. Life is a gift, and you were given a gift to be who you want to be in a country where that allows it. So I think it's the celebration.
Life is a precious gift.
Yes,
it is. Every morning you should get up and say, look out the window, and hopefully you can see a little tree or something and say, thank God I can see that beautiful tree. Or
I say that to my kids. I say that to my kids, and they start laughing. They're like, oh, Mom's looking at the tree again.
Well, for young people, maybe I'm talking like someone who went to Berkeley in 1963.
I just laugh.
Okay,
I go, well, I said, you know, life is really short, you know, and every 10 years you're older, so, and it goes really fast, so you really need to look at the tree.
Smell the daisies, they say, but
exactly.
young people want to have fun, and I, too, I may not be terribly young, but I am at heart. I want to go to parties still. I want to enjoy life, and I do.
I tell people I don't think about age. I don't think about the word old. I hate that word. Don't tell me old. And I said because as long as you are young at heart and you keep yourself active and busy and creative and do things and socialize with people and enjoy life, I said, you'll never be old. You'll just, because time is unlimited. So what's old?
Yes, it's
right?
Just a word. Yes,
just a word.
But also, there's another message in that book that I forgot to mention.
Okay.
These actions, the mother's addiction to, you know, impressing the neighbors, to dressing in style, to have living in Montecito when they can't really afford it, and the father's having a rough go of it. These actions have consequences. Also, she is mistreating her daughter. She mistreats her daughter from time to time. And
Right. Although
the daughter, Innie, forgives her and everything comes together at the end, there is not a happy ending for the father, really. I'm not going to say what it is, but I will say that he suffers for all of his wife's misgivings and mistakes. She makes some serious mistakes in that novel. And the father, when he finds out about them, he is such an innocent man, he cannot handle it. So there are some grievous consequences, and the mother learns too late. However, thanks to the grandmother who comes to the rescue, and Innie, they are going to, they will carry on. You know, they are tough women. They're going to carry on. But the father actually won't be with them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's very, very well written. And again, the name of the book is Rich White Americans by Virginia Dale. So, Virginia, now it's your time to shine. We've come to the end of the interview, unfortunately. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh,
I'm sure the audience has as well. I know, time goes fast when you're having fun. And so you can give your audience any message you like and anything about yourself you'd like them to know, and how they can purchase your book.
Well, I can tell them how to buy my book. As for me, I am just I'm someone who enjoys life. I'd love to meet them somehow, someday. The book, it's on Amazon.com under Virginia Dale, Rich White Americans. I've got a couple other books. And also you can buy it from the publishing company, Austin McCauley Publishers. And they have an email, and they have a website. But if you want to, let's see, they have an address, 40 Wall Street. That's 40, as in 40, 40 Wall Street, 28th floor, New York, 10005 USA. So that is their address in the United States. They also have a company in the England, but I don't have that address, unfortunately. Anyway, that is their. I would simply. The book is. $15. So send them $15 and they'll send you a book, or you can just go on Amazon.com and under Amazon Books and look up Rich White Americans and you can buy it through them.
Is your book hardcover, paperback, and ebook or not?
It is all three, yes. The hardback is slightly more expensive. It is $25.95. I didn't mention that because I figured everyone buy the soft cover one. But anyway, and the Kindle, there is a Kindle version, and I am not quite sure how much that costs. I should know that.
Usually they're very reasonable. Yeah,
it's very
Kindle's
reasonable.
Kindle's usually
it's
very reasonable.
$10.
Right.
And there
that's
is
fabulous. That is fabulous for Tyndale. It is exciting.
It is.
And I want to wish you much success with your book and the other books that you've published and also your future books and maybe even a movie screen here with Rich White Americans by Virginia Dale. Thank you so much for being on Columbo Chronicles.
Dreams,
it's been a pleasure.
Dreams do come true. Thank you, Rose. You've been absolutely wonderful.
You're so welcome, and you have a wonderful, wonderful holiday.
Okay. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, all of the above.
Same to you. Merry
Christmas.
I love Merry Christmas.
Okay, that'll do it. Okay, very good.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Have a great one. Enjoy your children.
Thank
bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye. Well, that's all we have time for today. And Virginia Dell has left the building. And be sure to get her book, Rich White Americans. It's so fun to go back to the 60s and hear about what life was about and in reality. And it'll help you understand or remind you of where we were and where we are today, because in order to understand the present, you have to go back to the past, and in order to understand the future, you have to know your past and know the present, and then you will be able to make some plans for the future. So God bless you. God bless America. Until next Wednesday at noon, this is the Rose saying, stay healthy, stay happy, God bless you. Remember, injustices can happen to you, and they can happen to me. But together, we can make a positive difference in the good old USA and around the world. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or, if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.